The reasonable man, said George Bernard Shaw, adapts himself to the world. The unreasonable one persists in trying to make the world adapt to him. Therefore, all progress depends upon the unreasonable man. Well, I hope we're all feeling very unreasonable here today, because I think this is what gatherings like this and organisations like Makespace are largely about. There are many people in the world, the majority perhaps, who when they see something wrong, something that isn't quite as it should be, assume that it can't be changed. Or that if it can, change is something that other people do. Then there are others, you lot, who know that all change has to begin somewhere and with somebody, and so why shouldn't that somebody be me? One of the most inventive people I've ever known, and the most unreasonable, was my old friend Martin King. I say was because sadly he's no longer with us. Martin, amongst his other achievements, was the creator of the T9 predictive text system that many of you will remember from pre-smartphone days. Martin was very smart, good, kind, and generous, and also suffered from manic depression. And the emotional swings made him rather hard to work with sometimes. He would tend to focus on small things which perhaps more laid-back people like me would just let go. He would notice that the door lock in a hotel room didn't work as well as it should, or that the poor waitress in a restaurant had to make how many trips she had to make to and from our table during the course of a meal to accomplish what she needed to accomplish. I remember one flight having a long discussion about the fact that as we changed time zones, we needed to go through this process of resetting our watches back 5 hours, and how ridiculous this was, that I had to do it and he had to do it, and we each probably took 30 seconds or a minute, but if you multiply that by the number of people on the plane, and then how many planes are crossing time zones every day of every year, and think about how much human time is wasted by the process of changing your watch time, and things like this. Martin, however, didn't just find these frustrations something to complain about. He often did complain about them, but he didn't just complain about them. Because for him, problems were things that had solutions. We just needed to invent them. And the solution to a problem would often be the basis for a business. Over the years of travelling and working with him, some of this rubbed off on me, and it's a great way to see the world if you can, to assume that by default, things can be fixed. In the past, I've been involved with many organisations, companies, even some government departments, who wanted to get their employees to be more inventive by holding invention sessions or innovation days. This usually happens when they discover they have fewer patents than their competitors. And in the past, I was always rather sceptical of these, because I thought people are just fundamentally inventive, or they aren't, and if your staff aren't being innovative enough, you don't need to hold invention sessions, you need to hold recruitment sessions and get yourself some new staff. But over the years, I've changed a bit on that, because I think almost everybody has a creative streak of some sort. They just don't all naturally think about directing it towards things like business goals. And I think that they can be encouraged and taught to do so, though I do think that this is done much better by having a few good people who serve as an inspiration for the others than it is by trying to run sessions. So, if innovation is something that can be taught, why don't we see more of this? Why don't we see our businesses and our governments being more inventive? Well, Cory Doctorow once said, very perceptively, I think, that innovation happens when people can afford to take risks. And afford maybe just in the financial sense. If this startup fails, will I lose the roof over my head? But it may be, if this project fails, will it damage my career prospects? Or even my self-esteem? Will I look like a complete plonker in the eyes of my friends and family? So whether or not you believe that innovation can be taught, the risks that people associate with expressing whatever creativity they may have in a particular context is something that we can change, that we can reduce. And that's partly what sessions like this are about. I don't know whether we're all going to come up with dozens of wonderful ideas from these next few days, or whether one person will come up with one. But even if it's the latter, we shouldn't be disappointed. Because you see, my willingness to try and perhaps fail is a key part of creating the environment in which you can try and perhaps succeed. We will all have contributed to whatever comes out of these sessions. Rachel asked me to say something about where good ideas come from in general. So let's talk about sex, baby. You see, if you look back at the history of human invention, there are remarkably few instances where a new idea springs beautifully developed and perfectly implemented from the head of a genius. In fact, I think innovation is almost entirely an evolutionary process. Small genetic modifications to existing ideas gradually expand what someone has called the boundaries of the possible. Very seldom do we leap 5 or 10 years into the future. Instead, what happens is that we do something today which enables us to do something tomorrow that we couldn't have done today based on what we knew yesterday. And because this frontier is slowly expanding across the world, most new ideas are discovered by several people at the same time. Think about Charles Darwin and Wallace, for example. Or Elisha Gray. Can anyone tell me who Elisha Gray was? Elisha Gray invented the telephone. Rather a good telephone, in fact. And he wrote a patent for it, and he took it to the patent office on the very same day that a chap named Alexander Graham Bell took his patent to the patent office. And there then ensued a big debate about who was to get the patent. But Bell was better connected, and sorry, that wasn't meant to be a pun. Bell was better connected and better funded, and there are all sorts of wrinkles to this story, like the fact that the patent examiner was supposedly a serious alcoholic who was heavily in debt to Alexander Graham Bell's lawyer. Perhaps revealed a little bit more than he should have done about the competition. And, of course, a German inventor named Johann Philipp Reis had already actually been selling commercially a telephone for a few years by this point, which made a bit of a mockery of the whole thing. But nonetheless, for whatever reason, Alexander Graham Bell got the patent and went on to have his name attached to one of the largest and most influential companies in American history. Now, don't get me wrong. I'm not saying that Alexander Graham Bell didn't do great stuff. He clearly did. He just wasn't the only one. And so if it's really true that most things are invented by several people at once all around the world, is there anything we can do to jump a little bit further ahead, or maybe jump in a different direction from everybody else? Well, sex, of course, because the best way to stir up an evolutionary gene pool is to bring multiple gene pools together, ideally from very different sources. This is why so many great human inventions actually have more than one name attached to them. Think of Crick and Watson, or Gilbert and Sullivan, or Jobs and Wozniak, or Sergey and Larry, depending on your favourite. And in fact, I suspect most of the times when we associate one name with an invention, we probably do so a bit unfairly. And the more diverse the gene pools that you bring together, the more interesting things can happen. Sometimes the boundaries of the possible in my discipline can move amoeba-like in one direction, and the boundaries of the possible in your discipline can extend a tentacle out in another direction, and sometimes they can meet. Especially if you have the help of a good dating agency like this one. You didn't know that's why you were here, did you? So I want to leave you with a quote from, I want to finish with a quote from a guy named Stephen K. Roberts, an interesting inventor in his own right. He has a phrase at the top of his webpage, which I've always liked. He says, "Art without engineering is dreaming. Engineering without art is calculating." So in these sessions, we're going to bring together artists and engineers and a few other species and mix up their gene pools and see what comes out. I can't wait to see what results, and I hope you have great fun doing it. Thank you.